Meeting will come to order. There's a quorum. Representative Brown, would you like to move the minutes of February 25th?
I move the minutes.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I always love that delay. let's see, who are we here? Representative Peterson, would you like to come to the...
There's a couple things. You don't mind, just go right away.
Thank you, Chair Otremba, and committee members. There's a couple pieces of paper coming around describing what we're talking about today. One's the current situation in the field. The second one is maybe the desired situation for the folks with me today from Westcon, Western Consolidated Cooperative out of Swift County area, specifically Holloway, Minnesota, which they treats about 55,000 acres per year with what, if you're from rural Minnesota, you know, are our anhydrous tanks, and what we're trying to do is get an increase in compliance with MnDOT and U.S. Department of Transportation requirements. So I think there's an amendment that came yesterday afternoon that the committee administrator got. Maybe it's in your packet. It was supposed to be described by MnDOT as well. But before I get too far down the road, it's best to hear from the folks who drove in as to why they want this change. And with me today is Ken DeBurr, the operations manager at Westcon, and Jeff Schmiesing, the agronomy manager at the co-op. So if those guys could take the mic and describe the changes, I'd sure appreciate their, you indulging them.
Representative Peterson, I'm going to move the bill.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. I move House File 2942 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance.
Okay.
Whoever wants to go first. Good morning. what we're asking or proposing here this morning has several reasons for it, and one
could
of them.
Could you identify yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. My name is Ken DeBurr. I'm operations manager at Western Consolidated Cooperative in Holloway, Minnesota. And this morning here, we're proposing is we'd like to go to a bigger anhydrous tank out in the field, that being a 5,000-gallon tank versus the 1,000-gallon tank that we use right now. And the reasons are several. One of the reasons has to do with safety. In the handout, it was stated in there that we cover, you know, right around 50 to 55,000 acres. A 1,000-gallon tank will cover approximately 20 acres, and then it has to be changed out in the field, which consists of hooking and unhooking hoses that are under pressure, and there's bleed-off valves on it, and it's inherently a dangerous operation. All of our people are trained. I mean, we have a lot of safety standards in place, and they're trained for it, but still, it's got some inherent safety problems with it. With the 5,000-gallon tanks, we would what we call tender or deliver product to the field out would be in a semi transport that holds 7,500 gallons, and it would eliminate all the hooking and unhooking of hoses out in the field all the time, and it would speed our process up, and we'd cover more acres in a day. We also have to hire a lot of labor, short-term seasonal labor in the fall to drive pickups of all these tanks in and out of the field. And in west central Minnesota, labor for us is getting to be a problem to find qualified. I mean, we can find people, but we need to find qualified people for this type of a job. And they have to have a hazmat endorsement. They have to have at the minimum right now, it's a class B CDL and those kinds of things. And it's getting harder all the time to find that. So if we could do the 5,000-gallon tank versus the 1,000-gallon tank, we could eliminate all the pickups running around with people in it that could be better qualified and so on. So like I said, it has to do with safety and it has to do with us just doing a better job out in the field for the farmer, getting more done in a very short period of time.
Thank you.
Right. I think you're all aware of what we're describing in the fall, driving around fast, getting the field work done before the winter comes. You know, it's that time of year, that situation, which we're all aware of when we're out in our districts and traveling the state. So if you want to add to that, Mr. Schmiesing, go ahead.
My name is Jeff Schmiesing. I'm the grounding manager with WestCon. And with the small tanks we're currently pulling now, we've got slow-moving vehicle signs on them. And normally a tractor can empty a small tank out anywhere from an hour to 2 hours. So we're constantly pulling small tanks out to the tractor and applicator. Where if we had the bigger tank, the 5,000-gallon tank, we had a transport sitting on the end of the field, we'd eliminate a lot of traffic on the road, that slow-moving vehicle. That time, it's part of the time of the year out in the country. You know, there's a lot of hunting going on, a lot of people out on the road, so we just like to eliminate some of the smaller vehicles on the road and go with more bigger professional type equipment like the semis, which can deliver right to the country with these tanker loads.
So I think what we'll hear, Madam Chair and members, is that MnDOT wants to weigh in as to what this would require if the change was made. And from my conversations with the business, WestCon, here this morning, leading up to the hearing, it sounds to me like they are prepared and ready and already doing some of the requirements that would be needed and necessary, so we're in compliance with federal rules and chapters and verses and all those things in books we don't read, but we need to definitely be in compliance or we'll just get in trouble. I think that's what the motion is, to why we need to go to transportation as well. And just another thing, you know, if there's, this is the time of year when we're all campaigning and running around and trying to door knock and go to several towns. So there should be less people in the way. You can get to your door knocking quicker. You know what I mean?
Just kidding.
So, you, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Peterson, just wondering, does this conflict in any way with federal regulations or how do they enter in with this?
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, I think that is why we need the amendment that is in the packet, so we do not pass something and then find out later that we did it wrong, and then the feds come in and say, oh, by the way, you don't get this federal money anymore either. So that's why we're moving to the next committee, not to the General Register, and the Senate is acting tomorrow. So I think it's an appropriate question, and MnDOT has been paying attention, the Department of Energy has been paying attention, so we get this right, and it's congruent with federal law.
And currently right now, they're doing it.
Could you say your name, please?
Right. Just state your name.
Jeff Meeting, grounding manager. Right now, the picks that we did pass around, they're already doing this in 3 or 4 other states, and we can list them for if you need them also, but they are doing this in some other states already. That's where we got the idea of doing this.
And Madam Chair, for the record, I think those states are correct to say Kansas, Nebraska, and Oklahoma.
Thank you. Representative Fowles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is the current limitation on tank size? Is it 1,000 gallons?
Just meeting again. Right now, we're using 1,000 or 1,500 gallon tanks. You can actually use a 2,000-gallon tank, but you start going into 2,000-gallon tank size, and the regulations need to kick in. They need a better equipment for hauling, which is a trailer with lights and brakes. Whereas the smaller tanks, we're not required to have that.
Okay. Follow up, please. So the plan will be that you will be unloading directly from the semis that come straight from the terminal then, is that right?
Correct. So we'll be eliminating one step in the procedure we're doing now. Right now we have the delivery truck go to the terminal, pick it up, bring it back to our small bullet at our plant, and Appleton, then it goes from there, goes in a small tank, pulled back up to the country. So by going to the semi direct to the field, we're eliminating one step, and that's where we think we'll pick something up on the safety. So we'll be handling it one less time.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Doty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess this is for anybody. What was the original reason for capping the size of these tanks? Is it a safety thing, or why do we have an upper limit in the first place?
I can't honestly answer that question. The part of the regulations is now to unload a tanker load, you need to go to the bullet, which is a permanent bullet in the small town, and that's got some barricades set up against it. It's also got safety features, you know, like water tanks and stuff sitting there for safety reasons for the tanker guy in case he has trouble. He's got some water to, you know, get it for emergency situations. As far as filling the bullet size, I really don't know if there is such a law, but it's the problem is getting a bigger size tank to the country, where we'd be pulling this tank to the country empty and then filling it out in the country with the transportation truck, or delivery truck.
Are there any other questions? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Peterson, do you anticipate any security, or this being any less secure? I mean, we hear a lot about narcotics and terrorism, and will you have the, will it be any less secure?
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, that's a very good question. I mean, it's definitely this local behavior at maybe at night type of situation, and I think once you, but being more scrutinized at a higher gallon tank, you know, this kicks in the drug and alcohol testing for sure, the fingerprinting, the eyesight checks. I think you might have to go to St. Cloud and get these licenses, from what I've heard from other applicators or guys who haul big tanks of diesel in the fall, and find out they don't have necessarily the correct licensing. I think it kicks into Class A CDL, I believe I was told. And from what I hear from Westcon, they're doing quite a bit of this already. But this would just make it so that they have to, and so we know who's driving. And, you know, when it gets dark and it's sitting in the field, strange things can happen. But I would hope that some of the other actions we've taken on, I think you're referring to methamphetamine, what do we call those? What's the correct word for? The what? Yeah. Oh, yeah, we got rid of that, and, you know,
the precursor.
The precursor, thank you, yeah. So, and we did some actions earlier, a couple years ago, that I would hope would, you know, be significant to decrease some of the strange activity at night.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Peterson. Now, I had a question along the same lines, and maybe I'll turn to the folks from Westcon. Could you talk a little bit more about the license requirements? There was a mention by Representative Peterson of St. Cloud. Could you elaborate a little bit about what those security and license requirements are?
Candy Burr. right now, anybody that pulls a tank where it's has to have at least a Class B CDL, and they also have to have a hazmat endorsement on it. And that's where, you know, they go to St. Cloud, then there's a background check done, there's fingerprinting done. They sit are checked out to make sure that they're the type of person that we want to pull that type of product out to the field.
Thank you.
Representative Erdahl, would you like to move the A1 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move the A1 amendment.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. I believe there are other testifiers that want to testify. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Greg Bezicki. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I've just got a couple of comments. We have been talking with the Department of Transportation. Mr. Mike Ritchie's in the room. He's really the expert on some of this. So if the committee would like additional information, I certainly would defer to him. Our expert actually, coincidentally, is in required anhydrous pneumonia training this morning, so that's why he's not here. Our biggest concern in this, first of all, we do support the amendment that has been offered because in talking with DOT, it puts it in compliance with the federal regs. And we understand that the federal regs for these cargo tanks above 3,000 are quite significant, but we're hearing that the industry, the regulated industry, is willing to comply with that. Our biggest concern is going to be the transfer, the safety of the operators and the residents and people traveling on the highways where these transfers do occur. Now, as was mentioned, those kinds of transfers now occur with the smaller bullets. This would be just larger material, and being in compliance with the federal rules and regs, I think, would ensure that. We would have to coordinate with U.S. DOT, Minnesota DOT, in terms of how to develop some kind of inspection and compliance system. We have not done that. I don't know how extensive that would be, but our biggest concern would be the transfer in the field and how that takes place. So, Madam Chair, that's all I have to say unless the committee or you have any questions.
Okay, thank you. I would like to have the MnDOT person come up also. Representative Fowles? Yeah.
My question is when anhydrous tanks are unloaded, when the semis are there unloading into the 30,000 gallon tanks, there's always, you know, water there, a stock tank full of water. If we're filling 5,000 gallon tanks in the country, that's going to be almost impossible to have that available. And what do we do when we can't do that? What's the plan B in that situation?
Madam Chair, Representative Faust, that's exactly why the system, the anhydrous regulatory system, is set up the way it is, so that we have those fixed locations. We do very significant inspections on those locations. There are requirements such as what you've mentioned and more, and we can identify those. This puts into play similar stringent requirements under the federal regs. And that would have to take place in the field. It would be very difficult to actually know where those locations are and the timing, and that's why I mentioned we would have to work out some kind of an inspection protocol to see how that is taking place. But those regulations, as my understanding, are actually more stringent, if you will, from the feds, so that there would be some safety measures in place. We'd have to actually enforce them. Right now, as you said, it's relatively simple to find the location.
Are there any other questions? I don't know your name, so would you...
Madam Chair, my name is Michael Ritchie. I'm a hazardous materials specialist with MnDOT's Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations. And I've been looking at this bill and working on the suggested amended language. The U.S. DOT hazmat transportation regulations have been adopted by the state in Minnesota Statutes 221.033. The adoption has been there for over 20 years. However, the federal regulations themselves, since 1990, when the first President Bush signed the Hazmat Transportation Act, supersede any state or local laws for any kind of hazmat transportation inter or intrastate, by highway, air, water, rail, even pipeline. And so the federal rules apply. The federal hazmat transportation rules for anhydrous ammonia specifically require specification cargo tanks built to a US DOT specification. Those tanks are required to be maintained, have regular inspections that are scheduled, all this. There is an exception in the federal hazmat regulations for the units that previous speakers have been referring to as bullets. Those are what are really called nurse tanks in the regulations. And the federal regulations allow nurse tanks up to 3,000 gallon capacity to be non-specification vessels built to a different engineering standard, but give them some limited exceptions. Those exceptions would not apply to any tank bigger than 3,000 gallons. Those tanks under the federal regulations would have to be USDOT specification vessels, again, tested, inspected, maintained to those standards. The USDOT regulations also have specific requirements for loading and unloading those vessels, which are basically about the equipment that has to be used. The USDOT regulations, other than referencing inspections on the tanks and their loading and unloading equipment, including hoses, don't get into the safety issues, if you want to call them the OSHA kind of issues. But those regulations are there. That's why the suggested amended language would reference those federal regulations, because they already apply just based on federal law.
Thank you. Representative Drestolski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, my question was for Mr. Baszucki. What type of additional or amended inspection procedures could you see happening in the field, as you referred to? Would there be additional costs or staff required with that?
Madam Chair, Representative, we haven't actually got to that point in terms of determining that. We do have a pretty significant anhydrous ammonia inspection protocols right now and inspections. Inspectors, we would probably retrain some of these folks. We'd issue some protocols and start exploring what kind of, we know what the federal regs are, so we'd be applying those. We see how frequently these things take place, and at this point, we don't anticipate that there's going to be a lot of facilities that are going to be doing this, but if this became a much more common practice, by that time we'd have an idea of what the cost would be and whether we need to come back to the legislature and discuss additional resources. So right now we'd basically be looking at shifting our existing program, providing some more training, and applying it in the field and seeing how things went.
Are there any other questions or discussion? Representative Demansky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question I have is, you referred to the other states that already allow the larger tank facilities on the field, and this may go back to the fellows from the Western Consolidated Co-op. In a border neighboring state situation, would you be authorized or allowed to use that same tank crossing the border into South Dakota or North Dakota?
Kendi Burke. I've talked to a company down in Kansas that does this right now, Garden City Co-op, and I did ask some questions about that, and I think they went through the legislature too to make changes so they could do that. And I can't say this for 100%, but my understanding was that they're okay to use that tank within that state. And then we just can't go across the border and use it as what's still in Kansas. So I think they got the law changed to use it in Kansas. I think Oklahoma did the same thing. My understanding is Nebraska did the same thing, but I don't think they can cross into a state that does not have them changes in place.
Thank you very much. I think, Madam Chair and Representative Szymanski, MnDOT would like to address that question as well.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, Representative Szymanski, if the federal rules are referenced in this legislation, they're federal rules. They'd be able to take those vehicles across state lines without any repercussions from USDOT hazmat transportation rules. There may be an individual state may require licensing of an applicator or something like that that wouldn't be covered by that, but if you reference the federal rules, they're good anywhere in the United States.
Thank you. Any further discussion or questions? Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Peterson, I'm sorry I walked in late. Did you mention the Association of Co-ops, where they're on, where they're at with this bill? Is there any communication with them at all?
Madam Chair and Senator Finstead said, no, I haven't heard anything from them on this specific. Or there's no letter or email I've received.
Well, Madam Chair, as this bill goes along, I know you are good at this, Representative Peterson, but I'd appreciate to try to engage them and to see if they have an issue on it. I don't know if they do or not, but I think it's worth having a discussion.
Is there somebody in the audience that would like to testify?
I don't know.
Okay.
I guess.
Madam Chair, my name is Bill Bond. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers. I'm not speaking for the Co-op Association. What I would have to say about this bill is, and again, our members are the folks that supply the producers, the anhydrous throughout the state. We just have not had a chance to really understand what this is going to do to our system. We have some concerns about it, but what we'd like to do is work with the author and the advocates to see what this means. It will if this practice becomes widespread, it will change the delivery system in the state, and I think that the public safety questions need to be addressed appropriately, and we just haven't had time. So we'd also like to engage the Co-op Association and see if we can't have a better handle on this, as I understand it's going to be heard in the Senate tomorrow. So we have some time to work on it. So just wanted to raise that concern and question, and we'll work with them.
Are there any other questions? Discussions?
Madam Chair, may I make one other comment? One of the members earlier asked about security. Any company operating these tanks would be covered by the USDOT's Hazmat Transportation Security Requirements. They would have to have a written security plan. They would have to provide security awareness training to their people. They would also have to provide facility security. They'd have to cover en route security and personnel security issues. So anybody that was using one of these tanks covered by those federal requirements as well.
Any other questions? Representative Falls.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate what you're trying to do with this bill as far as the efficiency goes. I can see that. But I do have concerns about the safety part that the last two people have talked about. You know, when we unload ammonia trucks, we've got water there, we've got a secure environment, we know where we're at, we know that there's water available, and I've worked with anhydrous enough to know how dangerous it is, and I know how important it is to get to a water supply as fast as possible, and if that water supply just isn't there, what do you do in that situation? And so I guess I have some real questions as far as safety goes on this. You know, I guess I also want to make a point that, you know, we can use 2,000 or 3,000 gallon tanks, and what you're saving, if we were comparing this sheet that you handed out, a 2,000 gallon tank or a 3,000 gallon tank compared to this new 5,000 gallon tank, the savings are half as much as what we're talking about here. And so I think that as far as an investment from the company standpoint, it would certainly be significantly cheaper to invest in 2,000 gallon tanks than the huge cost there must be to buy this 5,000 gallon system, as well as, I mean, I understand that there's some other efficiencies, but I'm just not comfortable with the safety aspect of this where it's sitting right now, and unless somebody's got some plans or somebody says this is what we're going to do to address those concerns, I guess I'd like to delay this somehow. But I'll hear what you have to say about safety, and we'll go from there.
Well, Jeff Meeting with Ground Manager Westgun again. Part of the safety requirements for the other states when I did it, the tractor in the field is required to have a 250-gallon water tank mounted to the tractor with a pump available to case of emergencies for any particular emergency that comes up, so there will be a water supply at all times on the tractor and applicator. As far as the savings goes,
we're not really doing this for a savings for the company, as far as, you know, trying to save, pull out 5,000 gallons versus 2,000 gallons. What we're trying to do is eliminate some trailers on the road and make the road safer.
I guess I understand that too. I guess my concern really is the water supply while we're unloading the trucks. I mean, that's my biggest safety concern. And because I do understand the part about, you know, less trailers on the road, that's a hazard as well. But I guess the water on the tractor, I mean, that's a little bit closer than what I think the DOT would like to see probably, but at least it's there, I guess, so.
Any other discussions or questions? If not, I remove the motion to pass House File 2942 as amended with referred to the Committee on Transportation. Is that okay? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
The bill passes. Representative Stevenson.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members.
Next up is House File 3145. I move House File 3145 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a couple of oral amendments I'd like to do to get the bill in the shape that we can discuss it, if I could. On line 1.9, change the 18 to 16. And then put in line 1.23 that this provision will be effective the date following enactment. If I get a page to hand some of these handouts out. Oh, thank you, ma'am.
No. We only have one page of the bill, so we're looking for it.
Is there more than one page?
If you want to explain the bill while some, we'll go get the second page.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if there is more than one page. Okay. Madam Chair, members, this is a provision that was brought to me by some constituents in St.
Stephen. Go ahead. Go ahead.
By some constituents in St. Stephen. In fact, every April, they pull out these large steam tractors, and I apologize, I don't have a picture of them, but they are the old steam-driven tractors that use the boilers on them, and they do a kind of a furrow tractor pull and till up the dirt just kind of as a point of remembrance, and they all gather around and have a picnic. Well, it's turned into quite a hobby, I think, throughout the state. I think in one of the committees, Higher Education and Workforce Development, last week we heard a bill on the southwestern part of the state that was requesting a cover for some of these old boiler tractors in a binding proposal. So it's something that, no pun intended, has some traction here, but it's got, you know, it's kind of a hobby that is coming into its own, and it also has the potential for creating some interest in high-pressure boilers for a profession that we are losing some of our expertise on. Just a little bit of background. I'm coming out of out of 22 years in the Navy, but the old ships used to have boilers. The new ships no longer have boilers, so we no longer have a BT or boiler tech. They're all steam turbine and and nuclear. So we're losing a lot of the expertise coming out of the Navy. So when we're talking about boiler expertise, we don't have kind of a pipeline that feeds that particular profession. And this would help that out a little bit in terms of getting young people engaged in working with this antique farm implementation, getting the concepts of steam boilers down. And the bill that you see before you puts together a criteria or a training criteria for these young people to go through. That's why you see the age going from 18 to 16 with a supervisor administering a particular program, a curriculum. I have the Department of Dolly with me today who has been working with this individual, and they have put together the letter that you have before you now that basically says thanks for working with us, and this is some of the criteria that we think are important for the proceeding of this bill. And at this point, I'll hand it over to Dave Johnson from Dolly.
My name is David Johnson, Madam Chair. I'm employed by the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry, Construction Codes and Licensing Division, the boiler unit with that. Our department's been in business for well over 125 years. And was one of the oldest forms of the government. So we've got a long history with these traction engines. And the hobby contacted us due to some budgetary cuts. We were unable to really put forward any of our concerns with this in the past, so they brought it forward to us. And they were able to draft this legislation that would require 50 hours of operating time, vice the 25 hours that's currently in effect, and also to lower the age from 18 down to 16. The reason for the increase in the number of hours is to dramatically increase the actual experience that these folks have prior to obtaining a license to operate them. And our department would be putting forth a checklist of operations that they would have to perform prior to being allowed to take the test. Some of these would include, like, starting and stopping the boiler, performing various operating functions on the boiler, in order to guarantee that they had the experience necessary to obtain the license. And the license process in the past has just allowed 25 hours of time, and we haven't had any real duties that were assigned on that other than to have the 25 hours of operating time. This would focus them on doing the duties that are required to safely operate the boiler. And also, as a provision of this bill, we need to have 16 hours allowed for a schooling that is available in the state in lieu of 16 hours of the operating time.
Are there any questions? Comments? Do you want to...
Madam Chair, if we could move those oral amendments, I think it put the bill in the shape that I think it needs to be. Good.
Representative Morrow, would
you... Madam Chair, I'll move the oral amendments that Representative Severson offered.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Here.
It's okay now.
And if there are any questions, I'd move to move this to the consent calendar if I could. But just kidding. The I think it's a new concept that is coming forward on some old equipment that gives us a new pipeline for bringing younger people into a potential profession here. That kind of backfilling a feeder that has dried up through the Navy process. So I would. I would hope that you could support the bill.
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I have a little bit of a concern as to where this training is happening. I mean, there's a group of people that love these tractors and stuff, but do they have training classes that people can go to? If I decided I want to do this, I could find a class online that I could go to, and I could get the 50 hours I need of operating this. My concern is that if by making it so difficult, are we going to run out of people that can run these things So when we go to the show you were talking about, or we go to Rolog, there's nobody there that can even start the equipment anymore. And they just sit there and we look at it rather than actually watch it go and pray and actually watch it work. So I guess that's my concern with it. I appreciate what you're trying to do as far as the safety standpoint and as far as, you know, getting people trained to do this. I think that's great. But my concern is, are we going to run out of people that can actually license to run these tractors if we do that?
Madam Chair and members, I guess one of the problems that we've been having is, like we've discussed, that we are running out of operators, not only in the hobby boiler industry, but in the boiler operations too. And I see your point of driving them away from it. However, we feel that this is going to bring them towards it instead, because the hobby is what is driving this. The people that are actually own these hobby boilers and that are trying to get younger people involved are the ones that are pushing this bill. And what they're attempting to do is to gain the interest of the people that are coming up through the ranks of children and getting them involved in this at an age of 16, vice 18. We're hoping that the extra number of hours, or we're confident that the extra number of hours required for training will allow that 16-year-old to be able to digest the danger of the hobby boilers and to be able to make responsible decisions regarding their safety. I probably don't, if you mentioned Rolog, so evidently you've been there. I don't need to, lecture the committee in regards to the amount of safety that's required to avoid a public catastrophe. And we feel that a 16-year-old, if they're given the proper training, would be able to operate these. And obviously we allow drivers at 16 to be able to operate cars, so we feel that we would be able to get, with the amount of training that we're requiring, a safe operation of these boilers with 16-year-olds operating the traction engines. And with the amount of time when they're 16 years old that they'd be spending with their fathers and their peers operating these engines, we feel that would instigate a love for this hobby that the senior members have. And throughout the trades right now, not just in boilers, but also in plumbing, electrical, and all the rest of them, when you look around, whenever I go out to do inspections, everybody is got gray hair. I'm not exempt from that, by the way. But the people that are doing these tasks are actually getting a lot older. And over a period of time here in the next 20 years or so, we're going to lose a lot of the people that are operating these hobby boilers and operating boilers in industry. And if something's not done to try to offer this as a career to younger people before they get interested in fast cars and computers, we're not going to be having anybody in the trades. And if we can't get plumbers and electricians and boiler operators, I think we're all going to be lost as a society.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Peterson. This is a very interesting bill, and I really have no problems with it, but I do have a question on line 1.21. Some language has been added. License is valid for the lifetime of the licensee unless revoked for cause. Unless revoked for cause is new language. I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit about the reason for including that language, and maybe this would also give some comfort to folks. Are there going to be inspections out in the field? How would that revocation occur? That might give also some comfort for those of us who might have some safety questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Morrow. Thanks for that input. You know, typically when we read in statute, a revoke for cause is some type of substandard performance or some event that has taken place that brings question out of the capabilities of the individual in reference here. But I'll defer to Mr. Johnson at this point and see if he's got any other explanations for that.
Madam Chair and Representative Morrow, we, as a unit, we haven't really had any teeth in our laws. And frankly, it's just been a bark that's kept, not a bite, that's kept our license law and all the boiler license statutes in force, because we haven't really had any peace in the law. Now there's been some changes to offer some administrative hearing possibilities and some fines, and we're also looking for, because this is a lifetime license, some language to offer the ability for somebody that is operating these steam engines dangerously to be able to revoke their license and stop them from being able to injure the public. So that's the reason for the revocation clause.
Any other questions or discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Don't you love these guys?
You're on a pretty mellow cruise here.
All those opposed?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
The motion. House File 3145 is passed and referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. Welcome.
Good morning.
Representative.
Morning, Madam Chair.
I move File 3139 to be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Everyone's in such a mellow mood this morning, and I noticed Representative Junkie is gone. Perhaps we could take up my bill to ban atrazine quickly. Well, just an idea. Madam Chair and members, I have a bill here that, if you recall, we attempted to do last year. I guess I ran into trouble someplace along the line having to do with this. And so the bill has been kind of cut down to just some technical changes that the Board of Animal Health would like to get resolved in their regulations and laws, and I have with me Dr. John King, who's the executive director, to explain the bill for us.
Dr. King. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dr. John King. I'm executive director of the Minnesota Board of Veterinary Medicine. House File 3139 makes four changes to the Veterinary Practice Act. It has no dollars involved. It is non-controversial. And it has no known opposition, which is a good thing. It's also supported by the State Veterinary Association. The four things that it's addressing is, one is allowing for a second pathway for the evaluation of foreign trained graduates, the educational equivalency of foreign trained graduates. Right now, that second pathway is accepted in 25 U.S. states and territories. And currently there's about 20 foreign trained graduates that complete their education, their fourth year of veterinary education at the University of Minnesota Veterinary Teaching Hospital. And this will allow for them a more streamlined approach so we can get veterinarians evaluated for their competency and license and get them out in the field. The process that's already allowed for in statute is a very good process. This is a comparable, equivalent process. It's just the current process, currently allowed for in Minnesota, is not meeting the needs of all of the foreign trained graduates, and there can be a waiting period as much as a year before they're allowed to practice independently. The second point is allowed for the candidates that could be eligible for employment at the University of Minnesota Veterinary Teaching Hospital to have more broad training, and would allow for their employment and working on animals owned by the public at the Veterinary Teaching Hospital with specific special licenses. would also require supervision on temporary clinician license, which basically is interns, residents, and people doing postgraduate work that are from foreign-trained veterinary schools. All clinicians that are working on at the veterinary medical center that work on animals owned by the public are required to be licensed. They're first, if they're eligible, to get just a regular license, and then if they're not, there's been some specialty licensing categories, so they are regulated because there are complaints that do come into the Board of Veterinary Medicine regarding some of the care that's given there. Minimal, but they're still required to be licensed. It would also eliminate the requirement for board orders to be sent by certified mail, and would allow just regular U.S. mail. This was a recommendation by the Minnesota Attorney General's office. What's happened is board orders were issued, and the individual, the subject of that order, would just simply not accept the registered or certified mail, and therefore the order could never be put into effect. And then the fourth thing would be to modify and clarify the prescribing authority and ability. So the language would be consistent with the Board of Pharmacy language and also FDA and other regulatory language. And I'm happy to answer any questions if there are some.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Testifier, let me get this straight. You said that this is non-controversial and there's no known opposition?
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, that, to the best of my knowledge, is the truth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is a Representative Schumper bill?
It is offered by Representative Schumper in the House. That's correct.
Somehow non-controversial and Representative Schumper in the same sentence. But you know, in the spirit of immigration reform, I'll support this.
Are there any other questions? Is there anybody else that wants to testify?
Madam Chair, I'm Tom Hegarty. I'm a veterinarian. I'm a former state veterinarian, and I'm representing the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association today, and the association strongly supports this bill. We think this is an important bill.
Thank you. Again, any other questions? Discussion?
Thank you.
If not, I will renew my motion to pass House File 3139 with recommendation that it be placed on the General Register. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The bill passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee.
See Representative Erdahl, I'm turning over a new leaf.
Everybody's jumping on the Schumper bandwagon today.
There we go.
Yeah, is it Bradley?
I need to make a correction for the record. The first bill we passed today was Health File 2928. It was the bill. Yeah, the bill was actually had the wrong number on the roster. So the correct motion was to pass House File 2928 and refer it to the Finance Committee. So there. Committee's adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for the record, I'm now the Republican lead on this committee. Basically, I'm accepting it in a caretaker role. I do think that Representative Hamilton should still be the lead. And for the record, I do not condone the consequences of previous votes by my caucus.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. The meeting's adjourned.